I doubt that being married to Jackson could be worse than what you're doing," I told her. "You'd just have one young man to manage, and I bet you could manage him fine." "Yes, and I could save him some money to boot," Mandy told me. "I wouldn't have to charge him every time he showed up with a stiffy, which is sometimes twice a day."
"Good point," I said.
"I just ordered a fine wedding dress."
"For me?" she asked. "You mean you had this planned?"
"No, I ordered it for me, but we're about the same size, and my nuptial prospects just went bouncing off in a stagecoach. You might as well use the dress and marry Jackson."
Something like a look of happiness shone in Mandy Williams's eyes for the first time since I'd known her. We two girls had worked up a fine little plot. When Deputy Jackson Courtwright woke up from his snooze, the first thing he discovered was that he was engaged. To my relief, he seemed pleased by the discovery.
"It's about time I got to be the one engaged," he said. "You must have been engaged 50 times. That's not my way of doing things."
"You do like Mandy, don't you?" I asked a little nervously, once I got Jackson alone for a few minutes. Mandy Williams had gone back up those stairs as sprightly as if she were walking on air. From having nothing but the task of deflating a lot of stiffies in Rita Blanca, she was now engaged to a scion of the Courtwrights. Our time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with Telegraph Days by Larry McMurtry. This has been Paul Tavilla for GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again Monday for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the coronavirus update, followed by USA Today at 2.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 75 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-60s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Welcome to your coronavirus update for Friday, October 2nd, 2020, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Today, we have an unusual show in light of the news from early this morning that President Trump has tested positive for coronavirus, which puts us into all new territory. So we will have quite a few headlines and short articles about that to lead off the show. And then as time remains, we'll bring you some other things, including time to report about Governor Greg Abbott's limiting counties to one absentee ballot drop-off location in Texas, bolstering GOP efforts to restrict voting. First, we'll take a look at the numbers. From the Odessa American, Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,927. Ector County negative, 22,835 out of 28,073 tested, with 311 pending, 99 deaths. Recovered, 4,184. Active, 644. ECISD daily cases, 2 students, 3 staff. Midland County, 3,890 confirmed, 85 deaths. For Texas, from the Texas Tribune, average new cases decreased by 74 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On October 1st, 3,234 new cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 14 patients compared with a week ago. As of October 1st, 3,190 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths decreased by 17 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On October 1st, 112 new deaths were reported. West Texas Intermediate is reflecting the numbers from world markets this morning as it's trading at $37.36, down $1.36. We will have reports on the world and the United States Wall Street markets in just a few minutes in the show. Now we'll take a look at a mix of headlines and short articles. President Trump tested positive for the coronavirus. Here's what we know. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump tested positive for coronavirus, the president announced early Friday morning. An extraordinary development, coming months into a global pandemic and in the final stretch of his re-election campaign. The diagnosis amounts to the most serious known health threat to a sitting American president in decades. At 74 years old, Trump falls into the highest risk category for serious complications from the disease, which has killed more than 200,000 Americans and more than 1 million people worldwide. His infection with the disease could prove destabilizing in an already fraught political climate, and stock market futures tumbled on news of Trump's infection. Trump was last seen in public Thursday afternoon returning to the White House after a fundraising trip to New Jersey. He did not appear ill, though did not speak to reporters as he walked into his residence. Hope Hicks tests positive. Hicks has traveled with the president multiple times recently, including to the first presidential debate in Cleveland on Tuesday, and was seen boarding Marine One. A source close to Hicks told CNN that she is experiencing symptoms and is back in Washington. A source familiar with Hicks' symptoms describes her as being achy and feeling pretty bad. CNN has reached out to Hicks for comment. Trump confirms he tested positive. Trump had initially tweeted late Thursday that he and the First Lady were planning to quarantine after Hicks tested positive for coronavirus. Trump later tweeted that he and the First Lady tested positive for coronavirus, saying they would begin their quarantine and recovery process. Melania Trump says they're feeling good. First Lady Melania Trump tweeted about her positive COVID-19 test results, saying, "We are feeling good and I have postponed all upcoming engagements," she said. "Please be sure you are staying safe and we will all get through this together." White House doctor confirms diagnosis. The president's physician, Sean P. Conley, confirmed the president and First Lady's diagnosis in a memo. "The president and First Lady are both well at this time, and they plan to remain at home within the White House during their convalescence," Conley wrote. Pence tests negative. Vice President Mike Pence and Second Lady Karen Pence tested negative for coronavirus Friday morning, according to a statement tweeted by spokesperson Devin O'Malley. O'Malley said Pence has been tested every day for COVID-19 as part of his daily routine for months. Biden being tested this morning. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is expected to get tested for coronavirus this morning, according to a source familiar with his plans. On Tuesday night, President Trump and Biden shared the debate stage during the first presidential debate. White House Chief of Staff confirms Trump does have mild symptoms. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows spoke to the press earlier from the White House about President Trump's coronavirus diagnosis. "The president does have mild symptoms, and we look to try to make sure that not only his health and safety and welfare is good, we continue to look at that for all of the American people. He continues to be not only in good spirits, but very energetic," Meadows said. He said the doctors continue to monitor the president and First Lady's health. Meadows added that Trump is staying committed to working very hard on behalf of the American people. "We have a president that is not only on the job, will remain on the job, and I'm optimistic that he'll have a very quick and speedy recovery," Meadows added. Here are other significant developments. Global markets were roiled Friday after Trump announced that he and the First Lady had tested positive for the coronavirus, creating new uncertainty roughly a month before Election Day. World leaders were quick to send well wishes, although some struck a more critical note. French government spokesman Gabriel Attal said Trump's positive test result was a sign that the virus spares no one, including those who are the most skeptical about its reality and gravity. Trump and his wife have joined a small but growing group of world leaders who have been diagnosed with COVID-19. Now, here's a look at some of the people who have been around the president and first lady. As we read earlier, Vice President Mike Pence and the second lady tested negative, according to a spokesperson. Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner test negative for the virus. Barron Trump tests negative for coronavirus. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar who is testifying before Capitol Hill today, tested negative for coronavirus this morning. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told the press pool traveling with him in Dubrovnik that he and his wife tested negative for coronavirus on Friday morning. Rudy Giuliani is getting tested today and has begun quarantine. Kamala Harris tested negative for COVID-19 Thursday as part of routine testing. Joe Biden has been tested for coronavirus and is awaiting results. President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, has tested negative for the coronavirus. Nancy Pelosi, who this week has been meeting with the administration's Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, was tested this morning for COVID-19 and is awaiting results. Jill Biden is also getting tested for coronavirus today. Republican National Chairwoman Rona McDaniel has also tested positive. Joe Biden wished Trump a swift recovery in a tweet Friday morning. In addition, the former vice president and his wife Jill said they are praying for the president and the first lady. Russia's Vladimir Putin sent Trump a telegram wishing him and Melania Trump a speedy recovery. Trump is on the phone and sounds good, White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow said earlier today. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he recently wrapped up a phone call with President Trump earlier today and that he is in good spirits, adding that the pair talked business. Trump cancels fundraiser in Washington and rally in Florida. Several White House officials are working from home. Different offices in the White House are getting contrasting instructions. Vice President Mike Pence's team have reinstated teleworking. But across the street from the West Wing, many national security officials were still awaiting any guidance. Staff learned of the diagnosis through tweets and the media, but have received no internal notices about it, even from the public health standpoint. We're all sitting around and wondering, okay, now what? The official told CNN. Chris Christie says no one was wearing masks during Trump's debate prep. Resident staff at the White House are nervous, source says. White House doing contact tracing on people who have been in touch with Trump and Hicks. Trump appeared tired on Thursday and sounded hoarse, administration official says. White House press secretary wasn't told Hicks was positive before briefing. White House press secretary Kayleigh McEnany did not know that Hope Hicks had tested positive for coronavirus when she held a press briefing Thursday, a senior administration official tells CNN. As CNN reported, a small group was aware Thursday morning about Hicks's diagnosis. Trump campaign did not alert Biden campaign of possible exposure. Biden campaign manager asks staffers to refrain from posting anything on social media. Meadows confirms the White House knew Hicks was positive before POTUS traveled. Pressed by CNN's Joe Johns on the timing of when the White House learned Hope Hicks had tested positive, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows conceded that people knew of her positive diagnosis before Marine One took off for New Jersey on Thursday afternoon for a fundraiser. Some staffers, he said, were pulled from Marine One, raising further questions about why the trip proceeded, the president coming into contact with numerous supporters at his Bedminster club. I'm not going to get into the TikTok. I can tell you, in terms of Hope Hicks, we discovered that right as the Marine One was taking off yesterday, Meadows said. We actually pulled some of the people that have been traveling and in close contact. The reason why it was reported out, just frankly, is that we had already started to contact tracing just prior to that event, he said. Multiple staffers told CNN's Caitlin Collins they did not learn of Hicks's diagnosis until Thursday night, shortly before it was reported by Bloomberg News. Meadows claimed that the White House acted quickly to inform the public of the president's diagnosis. As you know, last night, even in the early hours of this morning, the minute we got a confirmatory test on the president, we felt like it was important to get the news out there at the time. So that's why we sent out a tweet late, or early this morning, he said. Meadows said the White House has protocols in place to mitigate risks and make it easier for people to social distance. But regardless, the virus is still contagious. What you have is a virus that is contagious that certainly continues to be, regardless of whatever protocol we have, that it has the ability to affect everybody, he said. I can tell you that what we're doing is focusing on the therapeutics, the vaccines, continuing to do that, and that doesn't change, Meadows added. Meadows declined to say whether President Trump, who tested positive for coronavirus, is taking hydroxychloroquine, a treatment he repeatedly touted despite questionable benefits. Trump, he reiterated, has mild symptoms. Well, I'm not going to get into any particular treatment that he may or may not have, but he has mild symptoms. As we look at that, the doctor will continue to provide expertise in the residence. He is in the residence now, and in a true fashion, he's probably critiquing the way that I'm answering these questions, Meadows said. Dr. Sanjay Gupta says the odds are very much in Trump's favor. Given President Trump's age and his pre-existing conditions, he's going to be at increased risk after he tested positive for COVID-19. However, the odds are in his favor, CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta said. The odds are very much in his favor. I don't want to unsettle people too much with this. You know, greater than 90 to 95% chance that he will get through this. Still, he said on CNN's New Day. Trump has several risk factors for more severe COVID-19 symptoms, including his age and body mass index. Men are also more likely to suffer severe illness from coronavirus than women. Moving forward, the president needs to be in isolation for probably up to 2 weeks, Gupta said. Some context from Gupta. Isolation is different than quarantine. Isolation is for people who are infected with the virus. They've got to be isolated. All the people that he came in contact with, had close contact with, for more than 15 minutes within 6 feet, they need to be quarantined, not just tested. Tests can come back false negative. They need to be quarantined. We're talking about the highest levels of government. There's a lot of people who today will learn that they need to be in quarantine for possibly the next 2 weeks, he added. CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta explains when those who test positive for COVID-19 are most contagious. People who test positive for COVID-19 are actually most contagious in the few days before they develop symptoms, according to CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta, as President Trump, First Lady Melania Trump, and advisor Hope Hicks all tested positive for the virus. If this is the point where he started to develop symptoms, it probably meant that you were doing most of what they call the viral shedding in the couple or 3 days before that. Okay, so today is Friday, symptoms Thursday. So now you're going back to Tuesday or Monday in terms of contagiousness. It also makes a difference on the backside in terms of when someone might be cleared from isolation, he said. Contact tracers would focus on that earlier time frame, Gupta explains. President Trump has mild symptoms from the coronavirus, a White House official told CNN. I think that one of the most critical points here, and I think this is what's different about this particular virus, is that the contagiousness, like how contagious somebody is, tends to be the highest in the couple or 3 days before they develop symptoms, Gupta explained. White House officials knew Hope Hicks tested positive, but Trump still traveled for a fundraiser. As the nation reacts to the news of President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump's coronavirus diagnoses, some are also raising questions about the administration's handling of the situation after top Trump aide Hope Hicks confirmed that she had tested positive. A small group of White House officials knew by Thursday morning that Hicks had contracted COVID-19, according to CNN correspondent Caitlin Collins. But Trump still took a trip to New Jersey for a fundraiser, and Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany still held a news briefing at the White House on Thursday. McEnany didn't wear a mask at the briefing and made no mention of Hicks's diagnosis to reporters in the room, Collins said. So the question is going to be for the White House, why did the president still go to New Jersey, knowing that he could potentially put all these people at risk, these donors and fundraisers? And of course, Why did the press secretary still hold a briefing despite knowing she had come into contact with somebody who had just tested positive for coronavirus? Collins said. She didn't even tell us, didn't even tell reporters who were on the plane. And there are going to be serious questions about the White House keeping that information, not just from the reporters in the room, but also from the American people about the state of the health of the president and the people that he potentially came into contact with. Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis spurs national security concerns, ex-DHS official says. Miles Taylor, former chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security, says that President Trump having coronavirus also sparks national security concerns. You have key agents that are responsible for protecting him that now likely also have to go into quarantine. So you have new shifts of agents coming in. There's going to be an extensive contact tracing effort, and this isn't just a contact tracing effort for anyone. It's a contact tracing effort for the commander-in-chief, Taylor said on CNN's New Day. There's a broader issue regarding continuity of government, he said. Taylor said that while he was in the DHS, there were trainings to prepare for situations where leadership might be affected from doing their jobs. The thing that very few of us have talked about publicly and hoped never happened is that the lax approach to the COVID-19 pandemic might actually have an effect on the stability of the federal government. We are now in that situation, he said. Taylor said that while he wishes the president a speedy recovery, we have to consider the possibility that this may affect, again, his ability to carry out the duties of his office. That's a big concern. It's something that this White House wasn't preparing for, in my view. Taylor said officials also need to keep an eye on foreign actors looking to capitalize on this moment. Senior national security officials are watching to make sure that our foreign adversaries don't find a way to exploit this health crisis that's reached the highest levels of the U.S. government, he added. Wall Street has urgent questions about Trump's diagnosis. U.S. stock futures plunged after Trump tweeted that both he and the First Lady tested positive for the coronavirus, an extraordinary development that threatens to plunge his re-election campaign into disarray and raises questions over the leadership of the world's biggest economy. Global markets were also roiled by the news. Dow futures were down 370 points, or 1.3%, after falling more than 450 points just after Trump tweeted his condition. S&P 500 futures were down 1.3%, and NASDAQ futures were down 1.6%. The last U.S. jobs report before the November election posts Friday morning. What it reveals could have ramifications both for the presidential race and stimulus talks, which on Thursday appeared to be at an impasse. As the president begins quarantining in the White House, investors have more questions than answers. The VIX, which tracks expectations of U.S. stock market volatility, jumped 8% Friday as traders digested the news. Global markets fall after Trump tests positive for coronavirus. News that President Trump had tested positive for the coronavirus sent shockwaves through global markets early Friday morning as investors braced for an uncertain political landscape. Futures tied to the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell by more than 400 points, or 1.6%, in the first hour after Trump disclosed his test results in a tweet. Oil prices fell by about 2%, compounding 2 weeks of decline that had been attributed to the lack of a new stimulus package, according to Reuters. Asian markets, including Japan's Nikkei 225 and Australia's S&P AX 200, took a tumble. European markets opened lower on Friday. The FTSE 100 in the United Kingdom and the DAX in Germany and the CAC 40 in France were all down by about 1% at the start of trading. We're in a situation where there are more questions than answers, Robert Rennie, a market analyst, told the Financial Times. U.S. stock markets had wrapped up the third quarter on a high note Wednesday and showed gains Thursday as optimism built for a new round of stimulus talks. Final jobs report before the election shows a slowdown in the recovery. The U.S. economy added 661,000 jobs in September, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said Friday. That was a smaller jobs bump than economists were expecting. The unemployment rate fell to 7.9%, down from 8.4% in August, and also lower than Wall Street's forecast of 8.2%. This is the highest the unemployment rate has been ahead of a presidential election since the government started tracking the monthly rate in 1948. The report is the last look at the labor market before the presidential election in November. The October jobs report will be published on the Friday following the election. The pandemic has ravaged America's previously strong job market, and more than 22 million jobs vanished in the spring lockdown. If President Trump loses the election, he could become the first president on record, going back to President Harry Truman, to leave the White House with fewer jobs than when he started. Comparing presidents' jobs records in the first 44 months in office over the same time period, Trump comes last. Wall Street will be watching healthcare stocks closely Friday as the need for a coronavirus vaccine becomes even more pressing. Shares of Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Novavax, and Moderna were all lower in early trading, along with the broader market, shows a slowdown in the recovery. Head of Debates Commission declines to comment about future contests. Frank Fahrenkopf, the head of the Commission on Presidential Debates, declined to comment when asked on Friday about the future of presidential and vice presidential debates after President Trump tested positive for COVID-19. "No comment right now," he said. Fahrenkopf also declined to comment on questions about precautions taken at the first debate between Trump and Joe Biden. These are the next scheduled debates. Wednesday, October 7th, the vice presidential debate between Mike Pence and California Senator Kamala Harris at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. Thursday, October 15th, the second presidential debate between Trump and Biden at the Adrian Arsht Center for the Performing Arts in Miami. Thursday, October 22nd, the third and final debate between Biden and Trump at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. Trump's positive test could further challenge his re-election bid. Trump's early morning announcement marked an extraordinary turn for the first family, coming little more than a month before Election Day, and as Trump has escalated his campaign pace in an effort to catch Democratic nominee Joe Biden, who leads in national and key state polls. Trump, aides and voters say, trails largely because of his handling of the virus, which has dominated voters' attention, along with the economic collapse caused by the pandemic shutdowns. The virus could further challenge Trump's re-election bid because advisors were hoping to close the gap in the upcoming weeks with an aggressive travel schedule and a message that the coronavirus had largely passed. Since late Tuesday, Trump has appeared with thousands at a rally in Minnesota, debated Biden on stage, and has interacted with a coterie of aides and political advisors at the White House. There was no immediate answer from Biden's camp as to whether he has been tested. Following negative virus test, HHS secretary to testify in person on Capitol Hill for first time since February. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar is continuing with his plans to testify Friday morning on the Trump administration's coronavirus response before the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis, the first time since February that the government's top health official will face questions on Capitol Hill. An Azar spokeswoman, Caitlin Oakley, said that the secretary will appear in person after being tested for the virus early Friday and showing a negative result. Azar attended events at the White House on Saturday and Monday in the days before President Trump and the First Lady tested positive, but was not in proximity to either one, according to an individual familiar with the events who spoke on condition of anonymity about the secretary's interactions with the president's schedule. The Select Committee's chairman, House Majority Whip James E. Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, said on CNN before the hearing Friday that his staff and HHS staff have been coordinating early in the morning to determine whether Azar should testify virtually instead, depending on how much the secretary had been in contact with Trump. In addition to wishing the Trumps a speedy and complete recovery, Clyburn told CNN that he hoped the president is chastened about the pandemic severity and that everybody that's been exposed will do as necessary to make sure we can contain this. Clyburn also said, "We've been very concerned about political interference by administration officials in the government's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. The committee staff has compiled a list of 47 such instances, most based on previous news accounts." Now, I'm going back to some of the news sources' websites at the moment to catch up on what we may have missed and have been published since we began the show, because news is, as you can imagine, coming quite rapidly today. Here are a few of the new articles that seem to be appearing at this time. Trump expected to talk with governors today. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said President Trump is expected to be on a governor's call at noon today. Cuomo made the comment during the state's COVID-19 news briefing. The governor said that if Trump is on the call, it would be good news because Trump is still working. Governors are supposed to be discussing COVID-19 with the president. Melania Trump also experiencing mild symptoms. First Lady Melania Trump tweets confirmed that she also has mild symptoms of the coronavirus, but she added, "Overall feeling good. Thank you for the love you are sending our way. I have mild symptoms, but overall feeling good. I am looking forward to a speedy recovery," Trump said on Twitter. The White House has said that President Trump is also currently experiencing mild symptoms. Defense Secretary last saw Trump Sunday and has tested negative. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, tested negative for COVID-19 Friday, and Secretary of Defense Mark Esper was tested again Friday as planned for continuation as of his travel after testing negative on Monday and Wednesday this week, according to Pentagon spokesperson Jonathan Hoffman. Here's why a negative test result is not a shield against COVID-19. Following President Trump testing positive for COVID-19, several government officials who regularly interact with him have announced that they have gotten tested and the result came out negative. This includes Ivanka Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. But here's why a negative test may not be enough. A test can produce a false negative. You can test negative one day and then test positive the next day, or even the same day, you can get two different results, said Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. It's why testing can only go so far. He recommended that every person who came into close contact with the president, more than 15 minutes within 6 feet, needs to quarantine regardless of their test results. They need to be quarantined, not just tested. Tested is nice. It's important to have. But tests can come back false negative, Gupta said. Even on the day of the debate, tests could have come back false negative. That's why everyone has to behave like they have the virus. You are most contagious before you show symptoms of COVID-19. As contact tracing gets underway at the highest levels of U.S. government, Dr. Gupta says we're getting a look at what should have been happening in the country all along. This level of contact tracing, quarantining. If we would be doing this, it could have helped curb this pandemic. CDC director tested negative Tuesday and has had no close contact with Trump. Robert Redfield, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, tested negative for COVID-19 on Tuesday and did not have direct close contact with the president during the time frame that would have resulted in an exposure, a CDC spokesperson said in a statement. Exact distance between Trump and Biden podiums at debate was 12 feet 8 inches. Per a source with knowledge of the presidential debate setup, the distance between Donald Trump and Joe Biden's podiums at Tuesday's debate was 12 feet 8 inches, the debate's COVID-19 measures. The candidates did not shake hands with each other during the debate and did not shake hands with the moderator. Biden nor Trump wore masks on stage. According to the Commission on Presidential Debates, everyone attending the debate at Case Western Reserve University would undergo testing for COVID-19 and follow other health safety protocols. Senator Mike Lee tests positive for coronavirus. Senator Mike Lee, a Republican from Utah who met with Amy Coney Barrett Tuesday, has tested positive for coronavirus. He took the test yesterday and the results came back today, according to a statement he posted on Twitter. In his tweet, he makes a point of noting that he'll be back in time for the Senate Judiciary Committee vote on Barrett's nomination. Lee also attended the Supreme Court unveiling announcement on Saturday. As quickly as news reports keep appearing, I'm sure there will be more during our hour that we're visiting today. However, I'd like to move over to Texas news, and in particular regarding the elections. From the Associated Press, Texas governor restricts mail-in ballot drop-off locations. Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Thursday dramatically reduced the state's number of drop-off sites for mail-in ballots, a move the Republicans said was needed to ensure election security, while Democrats quickly blasted it as a naked effort to suppress voters. Abbott's order limits drop-offs to a single location per county starting Friday, shuttering dozens of sites statewide in some of Texas's largest cities, Democratic strongholds in a state run by Republicans, as voters are already returning ballots for the November presidential election, among others. The order also allows poll watchers to observe ballot deliveries at each place. These enhanced security protocols will ensure greater transparency and will help stop attempts at illegal voting, Abbott said, days after fellow Republican President Donald Trump urged his supporters to watch the polls. Trump has spread falsehoods about mail-in voting, suggesting without evidence that the process, which is surging in popularity during the coronavirus pandemic, was ripe for fraud. Texas is just one of five states not allowing widespread mail-in voting this year, with polls showing unusually tight races in America's biggest red state. Democrats could take over the state House of Representatives for the first time in 20 years. Meanwhile, battles over voting access have intensified. Abbott has resisted calls to expand eligibility to vote by mail, and courts have sided with GOP leaders who say fear of catching COVID-19 doesn't qualify voters to receive mail-in ballots. To qualify for a mail-in ballot in Texas, voters must be away from their county of residence on election day and during the early voting period, sick or disabled, confined in jail but otherwise eligible to vote, or 65 years old or more. Abbott's latest order is likely to draw more court action. Harris County, which includes Houston and is one of the most populous counties in the U.S., had 12 drop-off locations planned for its more than 2 million registered voters as of September. Travis County, which includes the state capital of Austin, had 4. And some of Texas's 254 counties are individually as large as 6,000 square miles. The top elected official for the Houston area drove home that point in a tweet. Harris County alone is larger than the entire state of Rhode Island. Mail ballot voters shouldn't have to drive 30 miles to drop off their ballot or rely on a mail system that's facing cutbacks, said Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo, a Democrat. The county will fight this to the extent that we can, Hidalgo told the Associated Press, and county lawyers are considering legal action. She said Abbott's action was another effort to suppress voters and an additional obstacle to democracy. The U.S. Postal Service informed Texas in July that given the state's current mail-in ballot request deadline, some ballots may not be delivered to voters by Election Day, and that even if all ballots reached voters on time, there was a significant risk that completed ballots postmarked on or near Election Day would not be received by the state's November 4th deadline. The Texas Secretary of State's office has not responded to Associated Press requests for comment on its plans to ensure the timely delivery of ballots. Harris County Clerk Chris Collins said in a statement that he applauded Abbott's July decision to allow voters to drop off their mail ballots before Election Day because it gave voters more options to vote safely during the global pandemic and alleviated concerns over mail delivery. but cutting back to a single drop-off location will harm voters, Holland said. Our office is more than willing to accommodate poll watchers at mail ballot drop-off locations, Holland said. But to force hundreds of thousands of seniors and voters with disabilities to use a single drop-off location in a county that stretches over 2,000 square miles is prejudicial and dangerous. Texas Democratic Party Chair Gilberto Hinojosa said in a statement following the proclamation that Republicans were on the verge of losing, so Governor Abbott is trying to adjust the rules last minute. He said courts nationwide have held that it is too late to make changes to election rules. Make no mistake, democracy itself is on the ballot, Hinojosa said in a statement. Here's a related article from the Texas Tribune. Voters and voting rights groups sue Governor Greg Abbott over order to close ballot drop-off locations. Voting rights advocates and civic groups have rushed to the courthouse in a bid to block Republican Governor Greg Abbott's October 1st order, allowing Texas counties no more than one drop-off location for voters casting absentee ballots, calling the directive an unconstitutional burden on the right to vote that will disproportionately impact voters of color in the state's biggest cities. The Texas and National Leagues of United Latin American Citizens, the League of Women Voters of Texas, and two Texas voters asked a federal judge in Austin in a lawsuit filed late Thursday to overturn the governor's order, which forced Travis and Harris counties, two of the state's most important Democratic strongholds, to shutter a number of drop-off sites that they had already opened this week. The impact of this 11th-hour decision is momentous, targets Texas's most vulnerable voters, older voters, and voters with disabilities, and results in wild variations in access to absentee voting drop-off locations depending on the county a voter resides in, attorneys for the groups argued. It also results in predictable disproportionate impacts on minority communities that were already hit hardest by the COVID-19 crisis. Attorneys also pointed out that Abbott was making a major change to election procedures just weeks away from an election, an action the state and its attorneys argued was improper in a separate federal lawsuit over straight ticket voting. Unprecedented numbers of Texas voters are requesting mail-in ballots for the highly charged election underway as the nation is in the grip of the coronavirus pandemic. Many of those voters are expected to drop off their ballots in person rather than entrusting them to the U.S. Postal Service, which has been plagued by cutbacks and doubts over its ability to deliver ballots early enough to be counted. Texas Republicans have vigorously fought efforts to facilitate increased mail-in balloting, particularly in Harris County, the state's largest and a Democratic stronghold where voter turnout could prove pivotal in this year's election. Spokespeople for the governor and Texas Attorney General did not immediately return requests for comment. The lawsuit will have to move quickly, with early voting set to begin in less than 2 weeks on October 13th. Now we'll go to a pre-recorded report. This is from the columnist Ross Ramsey. His analysis, the confounding commotion around voting in Texas.
This is Ross Ramsey from the Texas Tribune. Today's column, the confounding commotion around voting in Texas. The Texas elections are looming, and the courts are full of cases about the state's laws on early voting, voting by mail, straight ticket voting, voting locations, you name it. Election day is only a month away, but the voting laws in effect today might not be the voting laws in effect when you vote. That's not very relaxing. That said, most judges are allergic to rulings that affect elections in progress, so the time for making big changes to Texas election and voting laws may be drawing to a close. Voting starts, probably, in less than 2 weeks, on October 13th. Monday, October 5th, is the last day to register to vote. Absentee ballots from some counties are already in the mail. Election day is November 3rd. The courts should be wrapping things up. The 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued what might be the final say on straight ticket voting this week. In 2017, the Texas legislature voted to kill one-punch voting, where you can vote for all of a party's candidates with one punch instead of working your way down the ballot. Republicans wanted to kill it. Democrats, who believe it helps their down-ballot candidates, wanted to keep it. That law takes effect this year, and November will be the first time that popular way of voting is missing from Texas ballots. Democrats sued to reinstate it, won in trial court, and lost the first appeal. One point of interest to a judge with an eye on election disruption is that some absentee ballots have already been mailed to voters without the straight ticket option. You can also find reasons to believe that the legal tangles will continue through or even beyond November 3rd. The governor's pandemic-driven order to add 6 days for early voting, the better to extend opportunities and socially distance voters in the face of the coronavirus, is being challenged in the courts by some of his fellow Republicans. That group includes the chairman of the state GOP, the state's Republican Agriculture Commissioner, a number of state Republican legislators, and some conservative activists. They don't think the extra time is needed or that the governor has the power to extend early voting without the legislature, a complaint that also figures in their challenges to business closings and other pandemic restrictions issued from the governor's office. Politics aside, their lawsuit would shorten the early voting period to its original size, moving the start of early voting to October 19th from October 13th, the date everybody in politics has been advertising as the first day to vote. The courts might side with the challengers, but the longer they take, the more disruptive that ruling would be. The governor directly entered the fray on Thursday with another executive order, one his fellow Republicans agree with, limiting the number of drop-off locations for absentee ballots to one per county and allowing poll watchers the opportunity to observe any activity conducted at the early voting clerk's office location related to the in-person delivery of a marked mail ballot. Anyone voting absentee because of concerns about coronavirus infection should know that the governor's COVID-19 mask orders reintroduce the risks a mail-in ballot is supposed to avoid. The mask requirements don't apply to, quote, any person who is voting, assisting a voter, serving as a poll watcher, or actively administering an election, but wearing a face mask is strongly encouraged, end quote. Shutting down all but one location is a strike at the state's biggest and sometimes most Democratic counties. Harris and Travis, for instance, were already allowing voters to drop off absentee ballots at several locations each. Abbott's voters said ballots collected in those locations through Friday, October 2nd, would be counted. After that, the counties have to shut them down. Keeping with our general theme of courts and elections and voting, Travis County said it will sue to stop the governor's order just hours after he signed it. The governor had already extended the delivery times for voters, saying they could bring in absentee ballots before November 3rd, along with their voter identifications, and again blaming the pandemic for the change. The new order raised official Democratic hackles and might well be another reason to keep your eyes on the courts. This is not a full inventory of the Texas voting laws being considered and reconsidered by the courts, but the disputes are already threatening to disrupt this fraught election year and an anxious electorate. Some Texans have already voted absentee, either by mail or at one of those soon-to-be less numerous drop-off sites. Maybe the judges will sort out all of the litigation and the litigants before most of us vote. Maybe they won't or can't. It's noisy. Keep your head down and vote anyway.
Here's another Texas report, this one from the Texas Standard. Officials' short-term memories got in the way of Texas pandemic preparation.
2 years ago, pandemics were on the mind of top Texas state healthcare officials. A panel was tasked with prepping Texas for such an event. But by the time the group met again, it was March and too late. Texas was now bracing for impact. Of the nation's more than 200,000 coronavirus deaths, Texas has seen almost 16,000. So what happened? Here to talk about that, John Tedesco. He's one of the investigative reporters behind the Houston Chronicle's new series Exposed, which lays out just how flat-footed Texas was when COVID-19 hit this year and how that came to be. John, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thanks for having me.
Take us back to 2018 and this panel I mentioned. Were they asking the right questions back then?
They were asking the right questions. The problem is nothing much happened after that. They didn't meet again, even though they had planned to. And, you know, in the meantime, federal funding that could help states prepare for pandemics was plummeting. You know, fast forward to 2020 and the coronavirus hit, and we were unprepared for it.
Well, now, what about ventilators and face masks? Questions about were there enough epidemiologists? Were those sorts of questions front and center when that panel first met? And if so, why weren't there the face masks, for example?
Well, they were, those questions were asked. And, you know, one of the surprising things that we learned in this project was that there were a lot of people saying that we needed to make investments in those kinds of supplies to be ready for a pandemic. Those warnings, you know, there was spending, but the amount of funding dropped, and you know, our supplies, as we saw, just wasn't enough to go around when a real pandemic struck Texas, and that's why we saw so many shortages back in March and April.
But how did that happen? I mean, one of the issues that your story points to is this issue of this state's funding from the federal government. Now less than half of what it was in 2007. How was that possible when the state itself was seeing the possibility of a pandemic back in 2018?
Yeah, that's the main problem, and I think it speaks to, you know, where priorities are from policymakers. I think it speaks to short-term memories. You know, our story detailed how there were past pandemics such as H1N1, and there was an outbreak of Ebola, where there were some lessons that were learned, and those lessons were that we weren't really ready even for those milder outbreaks. And, you know, I think what happens is officials move on to the next thing, and they think that the past crisis is dealt with, and, you know, we don't prepare for the next crisis.
But here's an interesting thing. The Texas Division of Emergency Management is a relatively new standalone agency. It grew out of DPS and the governor's office. And yet, despite having this centralized point, it appears that there was not good workflow between cities and states and regions when it came to determining, for instance, who exactly was in charge. Has that been determined even yet?
There was a bill that a Texas lawmaker tried to pass to try to address that issue. This was back in 2015 when a state senator filed a bill to try to create a point person to deal with this. That bill did not pass. You know, you mentioned the Texas Division of Emergency Management. It ended up having to spend nearly $1.6 billion. It placed $1.6 billion in orders for PPE in this crazy spending spree. Now, some of those orders were canceled because some products were not legitimate, and some vendors flaked out and didn't supply what they wanted to supply. But the situation was unprecedented, and prices were being driven up because so many people needed protective equipment.
It's a story of how Texas got caught off guard even though they anticipated a pandemic. It's being reported by an investigative team at the Houston Chronicle. John Tedesco is part of that team. We'll link to their latest, texasstandard.org. John, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
And now this from the Texas Standard. First, COVID-19, now flu season arrives in Texas.
This month marks the beginning of flu season, which saw over 10,000 Texans die from flu-related illnesses last year. This year, experts are bracing for the combination of the seasonal flu and the coronavirus. Houston Public Media's Matt Harab reports on what local health officials are urging Texans to do now.
Last Sunday, I did what my mom's been asking me to do for weeks.
I'm just here to get a flu shot. I'm not sure where to go.
It'll be right here.
It'll be right here? Okay.
And there were only three slots available that morning at my local CVS.
Yeah, a lot of people have been coming in.
In January, a CVS health survey found that about a third of people nationwide wanted a flu shot. That number has almost doubled to 66% by July. Local experts are saying it's crucial to get a flu vaccine this year from their doctor or their local pharmacy. The Houston Health Department offers them for up to $15 to people without insurance. Dr. Tony Piedra at the Baylor College of Medicine says they don't know the impact of both the flu virus and the coronavirus circulating together.
We don't, because we really don't have the data.
Most infectious diseases are seasonal and therefore predictable, but COVID-19 is novel and hasn't been around yet during the fall. Piedra says people most at risk for the worst COVID-19 symptoms should prioritize a flu shot.
When you're more vulnerable, I think you have to be more careful. It may not be a perfect vaccine, but it's a good vaccine.
A tool that we don't have to fight COVID-19 yet. But Dr. Piedra says there's another reason why we don't know how the two viruses will interact. Every year, the United States gets a preview of the flu season from the Southern Hemisphere. That's because our seasons are flipped. And down there, it's been an abnormally light flu season because, as Piedra says, people were already on guard against COVID-19.
A lot of countries were practicing the appropriate type of social distancing and masking.
Take Australia. Their health department reported just 36 flu deaths through mid-July, compared to 430 during the same time period last year. Dr. Umair Shah, Harris County's public health director, says Governor Abbott's mask mandate could pay off during our flu season.
Now you see markedly more people wearing masks in public than you saw before.
Shaw says there's evidence masks work in Houston. The region didn't have to shut down completely during the coronavirus surge this summer. Instead, COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations declined, with people wearing masks regularly.
We have also evolved and learned from the previous months on what are the kinds of practices that actually will make all of us safer. And we just have to make sure we keep doing those things.
He says it's especially important as thousands of students return to in-person learning in Greater Houston. Because the flu spreads easily among kids, Shaw worries if children don't get a flu shot, they could potentially bring the flu home to a household member who has COVID-19 and doesn't know it. The CDC says roughly 40% of coronavirus carriers
today. Here are a couple of more short updates. Joe Biden tests negative for coronavirus. Joe Biden has tested negative for coronavirus, according to Dr. Kevin O'Connor, the Biden's primary care physician. Vice President Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden underwent PCR testing for COVID-19 today, and COVID-19 was not detected. I am reporting this out of my capacity as both Vice President Biden and Dr. Biden's primary care physician. And this. Trump not participating in midday call about coronavirus support for seniors, source says. President Trump is not participating in the midday call about coronavirus support for seniors that was listed on his public schedule. Instead, Vice President Mike Pence kicked off the call, saying Trump asked him to lead it, according to a state official. Pence did not provide a reason beyond saying that Trump and the First Lady tested positive. From there, he jumped into remarks. CNN has reached out to the White House for comment. And now one quick reminder. Monday is the last day to register to vote. If you are not registered but want to vote in the general election November 3rd, Monday is the last day to do that. Here are a couple of other dates. From October 13th to October 30th is early voting, and Election Day is November 3rd for the 2020 general election. And that is it for your coronavirus update for this Friday, October 2nd, 2020, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Here's what's coming up. Next, we'll bring you national news from USA Today. Following that is local news. Here's what some of our volunteer readers will be reading from the local newspapers. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, legislators say budget and redistricting will dominate session. Riddick requests hearing regarding termination. Elections office say ballots by mail are going out. Biden rep says Texas should lead energy transition. From the Odessa American, health pros urge flu shots. UTPB reports record enrollment. And Fiddlesticks Farms kicks off fall festival. Those local stories and more coming up at 3 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock, of course, we'll bring you more news from the Wall Street Journal. And a quick reminder that at 7 o'clock tonight, it is our program On the Lighter Side, which after this week's and just today's news, we could all use a little laugh. So On the Lighter Side, definitely recommend that coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. Now, as we do at the end of our show on Fridays, we're going to bring you a song. Tuesday, Lubbock, Texas native Mac Davis passed away. The country singer began his early work by writing for Elvis Presley, producing the hits such as In the Ghetto. His solo work in the 70s and 80s included I Believe in Music, Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me, and Texas in My Rearview Mirror. So we'll leave you with the Mac Davis song, which is an uplifting song that we could use today. Stop and Smell the Roses from Mac Davis. Thank you for listening. We'll be back Monday at 1. Stay safe and have a great weekend.
Hey, mister, where you gone in such a